Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Candace, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop. Today's program is focusing an update on triple-negative breast cancer, and today is that is part two of a three-part series of Living with Breast Cancer Treatment Updates. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, including the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. And I really want to thank all of these organizations for their collaboration with us today and for all of your interest in the program today. And because of your interest, actually, and our effort to spread the word about the program, we have over 681 participants on the call today. And this is a very important call, and we have experts on the call who are going to really address this topic so you can get state-of-the-art information about triple-negative breast cancer. Now, our participants, we have 681 participants on the call, mostly from the U.S., but we also have international participants from Canada, France, United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So a bit of a global call, people from all over the world on the call today. And today's program has been supported by a grant from Genentech, the Celgene Corporation, Genomic Health, Inc., Novartis Oncology, and Pfizer. And I really want to thank them for their support of this entire, not just today's program, but this entire series, and also for their corporate partnership, collaboration, and making this whole series possible. Now, we have really wonderful speakers on our program today. I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Edith Mitchell. And Dr. Mitchell is clinical professor of medicine and medical oncology, program leader, gastrointestinal oncology, Department of Medical Oncology. She's also director, Center to Eliminate Cancer Disparities. She's also associate director, Diversity Affairs, Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Jefferson, and she is president of the National Medical Association. In addition to this, Dr. Mitchell is actually on the president's Moonshot initiative. She's actually a member of the National Cancer Institute Blue Ribbon Panel of experts who will help to actually focus on research in cancer in general and with the intention of actually 10 years finding a cure for cancer, which is quite an amazing effort. And the whole effort started back in January of this year when President Obama announced this initiative, and Vice President Biden has been very involved in this as well. But what's really amazing is that Dr. Mitchell is on that blue ribbon panel, and she actually will be a very active voice in moving this along. So we're delighted to have her with us today on today's program. And Dr. Mitchell today is going to address an overview of triple-negative breast cancer, the role of precision medicine, and clinical trials, how research contributes to treatment options. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Mitchell.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. It is my privilege to speak this afternoon with such a dynamic panel of speakers, and thanks to the audience for being here to listen to us, to ask questions, to work with us, because it's really important that everyone and all stakeholders work with trying to decrease the burden of cancer in our community. So there have been a lot of talk about precision medicine, personalized medicine, genomic influenced medicine, and really for breast cancer, being the second leading cause of cancer in women, breast cancer has really been the prototype of the development of personalized medicine in reference to other cancers. So breast cancer, I call it the mother of all personalized medicine because it was really our understanding of breast cancer that influenced personalized medicine to be applied to other cancers. So when we look at breast cancer and the influences on treating patients and what determines which treatment and how, It's basically based on the pathological features of breast cancer and how does that impact outcome and treatment, and of course, understanding triple negative breast cancer, which is our topic for today. Well, breast cancer overall survival in the United States has really improved significantly over the last two decades. And when we look at prognostic factors in breast cancer, what are those factors that influence overall how well patients do? There are a number of those factors. First of all, the tumor size, whether or not lymph nodes are involved, the histologic grade of the tumor, whether there are receptors present on the cells of the tumor, and these include the estrogen receptor, the progesterone receptor, the HER2 new receptor. So these are important, as well as the degree of differentiation. Now, triple negative breast cancer actually is a term that describes cancers that have very low expression of those three receptors on the cancer cell. That is the estrogen receptor and the acronym ER, progesterone receptor, the acronym PR, and the human epidermal growth factor receptor 2, and the acronym is HER2. So these are important with the pathology of the breast cancer, but the association of triple negative breast cancer, and triple negative refers to those tumors that have either low expression or no expression of those three receptors. The clinical finding that triple negative breast cancers have a specific behavior that is different from tumors that have high expression of those three receptors. And basically these tumors are more aggressive. They tend to grow more rapidly and spread to other parts of the body earlier. Now, with the thoughts and the impact of personalized medicine, what has been found is that there are good treatments that are available for treating triple-negative breast cancer patients. However, we're still conducting research looking for a better understanding of triple-negative breast cancers, as well as developing new treatments for the women and the patients who have breast cancer or triple negative breast cancer. And I say the patients because, yes, men can develop and do develop breast cancers also. So triple negative breast cancer accounts for approximately 20% of breast cancers diagnosed throughout the world. And therefore, this is a large number of patients. It tends to occur more frequently in women less than 40 years old, and it is more commonly seen in women of color, and that is African-American women and Latino or Hispanic women when we compare the numbers with Caucasian women. However, some triple-negative breast cancers do occur in Caucasian women as well. Based on gene expression profiling, that is understanding and testing the genes in the molecular subtypes of breast cancer, we have found that there are a number of different groups. So there may be a reference to luminal A and B, or HER2 enriched, or basal light, and normal breast light. And the basal subtype of breast cancer is more frequently associated with triple negative breast cancer. And for triple negative breast cancer, again, there is a lack of expression of the three receptors, ERPR and HER2 for the cancer cells. Clinical studies have shown that over the years, women with triple-negative breast cancer tend to have worse outcomes. However, with the newer information, the outcomes of triple-negative breast cancer patients is improving significantly, and in some series may be superior to others. So the treatment of triple-negative breast cancer is improving significantly. There are efforts to develop new chemotherapy and other treatment modalities for these patients, because the important factor is that for triple-negative breast cancer, the typical medications that we think of in treating breast cancer, especially the hormonal therapies such as tamoxifen or other hormonal therapies, the patients don't respond to those medications, and in fact, in some cases, they may be harmful. There is also the premise that giving chemotherapy prior to surgery in triple-negative breast cancer patients can be more effective. Also, evaluating patients with chemotherapy prior to surgery allows us to evaluate the effectiveness of chemotherapy. There are also newer medications that have effectiveness in patients, particularly the PARP inhibitors, which are a new group of medications having specific effectiveness in triple-negative breast cancer, as well as using some of the old drugs that we had thought were not effective in treating breast cancer at all, and it turns out medications such as platinum agents may have benefit in women with triple-negative breast cancer, and combining the platinum agents with PARP inhibitors has constituted a new method of treating these patients. So therefore, triple-negative breast cancer is very important. It is very important for breast cancer patients to know the results of testing on their tumor with the three receptors, and should therefore know their whether their receptors are positive or negative. And therefore, this allows physicians to help treat patients earlier with the more effective agents. It also allows for clinical trials participation to continue the research and the efforts to improve survival in patients with triple-negative breast cancer. So there is a lot of research ongoing in triple-negative breast cancer. Breast cancer was the first cancer where we were able to use these three receptors to devise and delineate a plan for therapy that was on a personalized basis. So in summary, the research that is ongoing in the treatment of patients with breast cancer is tremendously important. I encourage patients to participate in clinical trials when you can, because this is how we have developed and improved therapy over the last 3 to 4 decades. So with that, Dr. Messner, it is my privilege to summarize and say that triple-negative breast cancer is a very important subtype of breast cancer. There are treatments available. Early diagnosis and screening have contributed significantly to the overall survival improvement in this group of patients, and the personalized care, the personalized histopathological evaluation of the tumor is very important. And I think President Obama's Moonshot Initiative with Vice President Biden as the chair will contribute significantly to the continued improvement and the continued availability and accessibility of clinical trials for patients in the United States. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Mitchell. That was really extraordinary and a wonderful introduction to the entire call. Lots of excellent information. And I see already there's questions coming in, so I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Melinda Telly. Dr. Telly is Assistant Professor of Medicine, Division of Oncology, Stanford University School of Medicine. And Dr. Telly is going to be addressing current standard of care, including chemotherapy, and new and emerging treatment approaches, as well as managing treatment side effects and pain, including neuropathy. It's really my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Telly.
Okay. Hello, everyone. It's my pleasure to be here with you today to talk about this important topic. So just to start off, the standard treatment for an early stage or localized triple-negative breast cancer includes both local treatment, which Dr. Newman will address, but often treatment for the body. And for triple-negative breast cancer, this comes in the form of combination chemotherapy and generally the anthracycline and taxane-type drugs are the standard drugs that are used for this type of breast cancer. Chemotherapy also remains the standard treatment for triple-negative breast cancer in the setting of a relapse or recurrence. In addition to chemotherapy, for patients who have advanced triple-negative breast cancer with bone involvement, bone metastasis, we commonly add in a bone strengthener medicine that helps to strengthen the bone, to reduce pain, fracture risk, or other skeletal complications. Fortunately, as you heard a little bit earlier, triple-negative breast cancer is one of the most chemotherapy-sensitive types of breast cancer, and certainly chemotherapy plays a major role in curing the majority of women with this breast cancer subtype. The challenge, however, is that there are, unfortunately, patients for whom our current standard therapy is inadequate, and they're at risk for their breast cancer coming back after initial treatment. For the other subtypes of breast cancer, we have additional treatments beyond chemotherapy that can target the estrogen receptor and HER2, for example, but in triple-negative breast cancer, there are currently no approved targeted drugs that can further improve outcomes over chemotherapy. And it's precisely for this reason that research in triple-negative breast cancer has been a major priority of ours. And I would say that if you look back over the last 10 to 20 years, we've definitely learned a lot about triple-negative breast cancers. We've learned that there is an important overlap between triple-negative breast cancer and hereditary or familial risk of breast cancer due to the alterations in the genes BRCA1 or BRCA2. For example, if you look at the breast cancers that develop in a BRCA1 mutation carrier, they're triple negative about 75 to 80% of the time. On the other hand, if you look at a large group of patients with triple negative breast cancer, unselected for family history, we actually will find that up to 20% of triple negative breast cancer patients might carry an alteration in either the BRCA1 or BRCA2 genes. So genetic testing is definitely something recommended for many women with triple negative breast cancer. If you look at the tumors that arise in carriers of the BRCA1 or BRCA2 alterations, the hallmark of these cancers are that they're compromised in their ability to effectively repair DNA. So every day, our cells are constantly being exposed to toxins that can cause DNA damage to our cells, and it's very important that this damage be repaired by our body's DNA repair machinery. Interestingly, we've learned that some triple-negative breast cancers, in addition to the ones that are related to the BRCA alterations, some of them not associated with the BRCA mutations may nonetheless have problems in effectively repairing DNA. And because of this, we have been carrying out a number of clinical trials to really assess treatments that try to exploit this weakness in the tumor by using medicines that cause DNA damage that the tumor is just left incapable of mending. And so, as was mentioned, the major drugs here include chemotherapy, platinum chemotherapy medicines, as well as a new class of drugs not yet FDA approved called the PARP inhibitors. Platinum chemotherapy drugs have been around for a really long time, but have not been part of the standard treatment in early stage breast cancer. These are drugs that directly damage DNA, and so there's been renewed interest in studying these drugs specifically in triple negative and the BRCA-associated breast cancers. To date, there have been three randomized studies that have looked at adding platinum to standard chemotherapy in women who have localized or early stage triple negative breast cancer. One of the smaller studies showed no difference in outcome, but there were two larger ones that did show higher complete response rates among patients receiving platinum chemotherapy prior to surgery. And in the last year, we've seen updates from these two studies, one from Germany and one from the United States, that reported out on the survival of these patients who received platinum in addition to standard treatment prior to surgery. The German study interestingly found that the 3-year survival rate was 10% higher in platinum-treated patients, while the study from the United States did not see a significant prolongation in survival among patients treated with platinum. These were both small studies, and there was concern that they weren't large enough to really look at these survival endpoints. And so we're still trying to understand if the addition of platinum to standard chemotherapy will ultimately lead to improved survival in larger groups of patients with triple-negative breast cancer. And we're also studying to try to understand if there are certain groups, certain patients with triple-negative breast cancer that might derive a greater benefit. Switching gears, I wanted to touch on another very exciting area of research that's really focusing on trying to activate the body's immune system to treat a number of different tumors, including triple-negative breast cancer. Multiple recent studies have shown that the presence of immune cells in and around a triple-negative tumor is associated with an improved treatment response and improved survival. And so this has been in the news quite a bit in the last year. We know that tumors, they can employ many different tricks to try to evade our body's immune system. And one trick relates to the production of a protein called PD-L1. And this can be produced by either the tumor cells themselves or some of the surrounding cells that are adjacent to the tumor. And this PD-L1, what it does is it binds to something called PD-1 on our immune cells, and when it binds, it effectively turns that immune cell off, so it won't be able to infiltrate into the cancer and kill that cancer. So there have been multiple new antibody drugs that have been developed, many of them now FDA approved for other cancer types, that can disrupt this interaction between the tumor cells and the immune cells, with the idea that by blocking this interaction, it will allow the body to unleash the immune system against the cancer. And these drugs have definitely shown impressive activity in a number of historically very difficult to treat cancers, including melanomas and kidney cancers, lung cancers. Last week, there was yet another approval, this time for bladder cancer. So we're a little bit further behind with this in breast cancer. In the last year, we've seen initial results from three small early studies look at these PD-1 and PD-L1 targeting antibodies for the treatment of patients with advanced triple-negative breast cancer. The two initial studies looked at just using these antibody drugs alone without chemotherapy, and did show that it was effective for a proportion of patients, with tumor shrinkage observed in about 20% of the enrolled patients. But in December, we saw the first results looking at the combination of one of these immunotherapy drugs with chemotherapy, And this showed a much more substantial increase in the response rate with this type of an approach. So we have multiple studies right now that are ongoing, including some large phase 3 trials and others that are being planned to try and investigate further immune therapies in triple-negative breast cancer. As with the platinums, we need to try and gain a better understanding of which triple-negative breast cancers will ultimately benefit most from this type of an approach. Lastly, I wanted to provide an update on a new drug that's being developed for patients with advanced triple-negative breast cancer. This is a drug that has recently been given a breakthrough therapy designation by the FDA, and some larger studies are soon to be initiated. This drug is called IMU-132. It's also known as sacituzumab, and this is an antibody that hones to a protein presently seen on the surface of many triple-negative breast cancers. And this antibody actually can deliver a chemotherapy drug directly inside of the cancer cell, and this medicine is called an antibody-drug conjugate. So far, this has been looked at in an early study, and these are in patients that were heavily pretreated. So these were patients with advanced triple-negative breast cancer whose cancer had become resistant to many of the standard chemotherapies, and they saw a 30% response rate and a 50% clinical benefit rate from this medication. And so this is an interesting drug that we hope will ultimately prove helpful for patients with metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. So for the last part of the talk, I just wanted to spend a few minutes to talk about management of treatment side effects. And as we discussed earlier, the standard of care for triple-negative breast cancer in both the early and advanced stages is chemotherapy. And while these therapies are extremely helpful to patients with triple-negative breast cancer and life-saving in many cases, they certainly come with many unwanted side effects, and these may include hair loss. We can see blood count lowering that can lead to infection risks, fever, anemia. We can see problems related to inflammation of the intestinal tract, mouth sores, esophagitis, nausea, diarrhea. Some patients will experience fatigue, body pain, skin and nail changes, cognitive changes, in addition to neuropathy. Fortunately, the majority of these side effects do resolve after completion of treatment, but there are certainly some side effects that can be long-lasting and have a negative impact on a patient's quality of life. For our patients with advanced triple-negative breast cancer who require ongoing chemotherapy treatment for long periods of time, these side effects can unfortunately accumulate and may limit one's ability to continue to receive chemotherapy. And I think for many patients, these side effects can be very discouraging. So for these reasons, it's important to accurately report your side effects to your doctor and care team. Oftentimes, side effects can be managed by either reducing the dose of the chemotherapy medication, delaying the treatment to allow some time for recovery, or by potentially switching to an alternative therapy. It's important that you take care of yourself while you're on chemotherapy, and I would encourage patients always to try to eat a well-balanced diet and to try to maintain activity level as much as possible. I think sleep is also really critical because sleep is when your body repairs itself, and poor sleep during chemotherapy certainly does you no favors. And so I always ask patients about their sleep and would recommend a sleeping medication for patients who are having trouble falling asleep or staying asleep. Daily multivitamin is encouraged, and there's some thought that potentially B vitamins may be helpful to protect against neuropathy. It is, however, important to discuss any supplements with your medical team and to make sure that there are no potential interactions with your chemotherapy medications. So in summary, I think that this is an exciting time in drug development for patients with triple-negative breast cancer. We're seeing many new drugs that are being developed and tested in patients with advanced triple-negative breast cancer, and ultimately we hope that if these strategies are successful, we'll start to see them move into the treatment for patients with early-stage triple-negative breast cancer. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Kelly. That was very excellent and very comprehensive, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Questions are coming in now, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Lisa Newman. Dr. Newman is an oncology surgeon. She is a breast oncology surgeon. She's director of the Breast Oncology Program for the Multi-Hospital Henry Ford Health System, HFHS, and founding medical director for the HFHS International Center for the Study of Breast Cancer Subtypes. And we're really delighted to have Dr. Newman on the call today, and she is going to address the role of surgery in the treatment of triple-negative breast cancer, follow-up care plan, and communicating with the healthcare team. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Newman.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner. It's such a pleasure to be a part of this amazing panel. As always, you've assembled such a truly terrific and very articulate group, so I'm really honored to be a part of this program today. So for the bulk of my time allocation, I will be discussing surgical management of triple-negative breast cancer, and then towards the end, I'll take a minute or two to discuss some of the important points that should always be interjected into the ongoing communication between the patient and their treatment team in terms of long-term survivorship issues and other discussion points of importance. So in discussing the surgical management of triple-negative breast cancer, it's important to note right off the bat that the surgical planning is pretty similar to the surgical planning that we address in non-triple-negative breast cancers. And the three important principles, whether you're talking about a newly diagnosed triple-negative or non-triple-negative breast cancer patient, are as follows. The first principle is that the primary tumor in the breast has to be taken care of. And this is the most basic, straightforward of treatment principles. Just as in a patient that has a cancer of the colon or a cancer of the lungs, you want to eliminate the cancerous growth from that body if it's at all feasible. And this is why the very high majority of breast cancer patients do require some surgery as at least one component of their care. Now, the second principle is a little bit more specific or unique to cases where we diagnose a cancer in a woman's breast. And this is the principle that the entire breast also has to be treated as an organ. We know that addressing and treating the entire breast is important because from the many, many decades when the only treatment that we had available for breast cancer was mastectomy, we learned from that experience that if you look at those mastectomy breast specimens carefully enough in the pathology laboratory after they've been removed from the operating room, you can actually find tiny microscopic amounts of cancer hidden in completely separate parts of the breast compared to where the cancerous growth was identified and biopsied. So it's only logical that you want to make sure that you've done something to ensure that the entire breast is treated so that you minimize the risk of those hidden areas continuing to grow and evolving into other cancerous abnormalities or lumps on the woman's chest wall. So it's these first two of the three principles that guide our surgical planning for the breast itself. And these two principles leave us with two standard treatment options. The first one, again, being mastectomy, our oldest form of treatment for breast cancer. And when we perform a mastectomy and completely remove the breast, we are pretty much covering these first two principles in one fell swoop. Whenever feasible, we like for our mastectomy patients to meet with the breast reconstruction, the breast plastic surgeons, so that they can evaluate their breast reconstruction options. A lot of breast reconstruction can be performed at the same time as the mastectomy, and this is what we call immediate breast reconstruction. But the door is pretty much never closed to breast reconstruction, and for a variety of reasons, some patients may complete all of their breast cancer treatment, including the mastectomy surgery, and then return to the operating room months or years later to undergo the breast reconstruction, and this is what we call delayed breast reconstruction. Now, the alternative surgical plan to mastectomy is breast-conserving or breast-saving surgery, where we perform a lumpectomy to focus on removing the known biopsy-proven cancerous growth or cancerous lump. And if the lumpectomy was successful, meaning that we were able to remove it completely with negative margins and we don't see any cancer cells at the surfaces of the lumpectomy specimen, once that lumpectomy is determined to be successful, then we treat the remaining breast tissue with radiation. And the whole point of the radiation is to substitute for the mastectomy and to kill the microscopic hidden amounts of cancer cells in that remaining breast. It's very important for patients to understand that survival from breast cancer is exactly the same regardless of whether the patient chooses the mastectomy surgery with or without the breast reconstruction, or if that patient chooses the breast conserving surgery. And survival is the same with these two surgical approaches because the life-threatening aspect of breast cancer tends to be driven by the risk of the cancer ever damaging other organs, such as the liver, the lungs, or the bones, through what we call distant metastatic spread. Some breast cancers, even tiny ones, can actually be hiding in these other organs at the time of diagnosis, and this is what we commonly refer to as micrometastatic disease. It's important for patients to understand, however, that we can effectively kill or sterilize micrometastatic disease in other organs with the medical treatments that you've heard so eloquently described by Dr. Mitchell and Dr. Telly already. And these medical treatments will circulate throughout the body, get into other organs, and again, they can be very successful at killing the micrometastatic burden of a patient. And so while chemotherapy does indeed have many side effects that are can be very difficult for patients, it is often life-saving for patients, especially our triple-negative breast cancer patients. So these chemotherapy treatments, again, can be critical for the outcome of patients with triple-negative disease, but because of its toxicity, we don't want to give it to all breast cancer patients. We want to reserve it for the cases where it is most likely to be important. And this is where the third principle of breast cancer surgical treatment comes into the picture, which is related to staging of the cancer by checking the lymph nodes or the glands of the underarm area. If we indeed find that there are cancer cells that have traveled from the breast cancer to the lymph nodes or the glands of the underarm area, that's a marker of a patient that is also more likely to have micrometastases hiding in other organs, and it's a marker of a patient that is indeed more likely to benefit from chemotherapy treatments. Now, for some breast cancer patients, we can evaluate those lymph nodes or glands of the underarm area with imaging procedures such as axillary ultrasound, sometimes accompanied by an ultrasound-guided needle biopsy. For most patients, however, we will need to do a surgical procedure to actually remove some of those lymph nodes of the underarm, and usually this surgical procedure is in the form of a sentinel lymph node biopsy, where we identify and then remove the most important lymph nodes that are responsible for draining that woman's breast and therefore her breast cancer. We evaluate those sentinel lymph nodes microscopically for the presence versus the absence of cancer, and then again, that information is very useful in helping us to figure out which patients will need chemotherapy. So in addition to evaluating those lymph nodes of the underarm, which is important regardless of whether the patient chooses the mastectomy approach or the lumpectomy surgical approach, because it allows us to help to make chemotherapy decisions, but in addition to looking at the lymph nodes, we do also look at the size and the microscopic pattern of the cancer in the breast in order to decide who needs chemotherapy. Since, as you've already heard, the triple-negative breast cancers tend to be biologically more aggressive, we do have a lower threshold for recommending chemotherapy even in the absence of a disease in those lymph nodes. The lymph node information will still be important for determining the benefit, the value of chemotherapy, and sometimes it will also be important in helping the radiation doctors decide on the radiation field either after the lumpectomy or in some cases even recommending radiation after a mastectomy if it turns out that the woman has multiple lymph nodes involved by cancer. Now, I will close by talking about some of the follow-up discussion points that should come into the clinical management of patients after the cancer has been diagnosed and during long-term follow-up. It is important to comment that in long-term follow-up of triple-negative breast cancer, some of the outcome patterns are relatively unique. And for triple-negative breast cancers, even though we do think of them as being biologically more aggressive inherently, the patients who relapse, the patients who recur from triple-negative breast cancer, almost always recur in the first 5 years after the cancer was treated. And if the woman has a very good outcome for those 5 years following treatment, they are very unlikely to have a recurrence past 5 years. But long-term management is still important, especially in the patients that opted for breast-conserving surgery, where you want to monitor the breast itself for any evidence of recurrence, and you want to monitor the patient's breast tissue on both sides for any evidence of developing a completely new breast cancer. Other issues that are important in the long-term discussions between the patient and their treating team will also revolve around clinical trial participation. Many of our clinical trials focus on treatment, as you heard from Dr. Tully and from Dr. Mitchell as well, because we are very aggressively looking for novel, less toxic medical treatments, therapeutic targeted treatments for triple-negative breast cancer. Other clinical trials are going to be based upon epidemiologic information that we need to acquire regarding triple-negative breast cancer. Dr. Mitchell touched upon the fact that triple-negative breast cancers are twice as common in the African-American community, and so a lot of our epidemiologic studies are trying to figure out why we see triple-negative breast cancers much more commonly among women with African ancestry. And we see this here in the United States with African-American women having a higher risk of triple-negative breast cancer. We also see that Western Sub-Saharan African women have a higher risk of triple-negative breast cancer. So there may be something related to the genetics and hereditary patterns that causes susceptibility for triple-negative breast cancer. Also, it is important for genetic counseling to be discussed with patients regularly as the woman is being followed up if she initially had a triple-negative breast cancer, because triple-negative breast cancers are definitely more likely to be associated with BRCA1 mutations, as Dr. Tully noted, and we are learning more and more about genetic testing for breast cancer, and so even though a woman may have been treated for breast cancer several years ago, it might be that she will require some of these genetic counseling and testing procedures to be repeated over her follow-up in the event that other markers of hereditary susceptibility are identified. And so I will close there and turn the program back over to Dr. Messner. And thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Newman. That was really outstanding and excellent and lots of information. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. And very helpful information, I think, for our participants today. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Stacey Lewis. Ms. Lewis is an oncology social worker, and she is our Women's Cancers Program Coordinator at Cancer Care. And Ms. Lewis is going to address some of the psychosocial services and programs that we offer at Cancer Care, as well as the role of support groups in helping to cope with triple-negative breast cancer. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Ms. Lewis.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. And as well, I'm very happy to be part of this program today. So I'm the Women's Cancers Program Coordinator here at Cancer Care, and I work with many people diagnosed with breast cancer, and specifically triple-negative breast cancer, as well as their family members. And I'd like to begin by speaking about the importance of creating a support network as part of your overall care and how we at Cancer Care can be part of that support network. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. Our programs here include individual counseling, which we offer face-to-face in our New York area, as well as over the telephone nationally, support groups, which we also provide face-to-face, as well as over the phone and online, educational programs, practical help, assistance navigating the healthcare system, and some limited financial assistance. And all of our services here are free of charge and provided by licensed master's level oncology social workers. Oncology social workers are trained in how a diagnosis of cancer affects a person as well as his or her family and friends. We are also trained to help cancer patients and their supports tackle the problems that accompany the disease, such as financial demands, physical changes, social adjustment, and the psychological impact. Adjusting to and finding ways of coping with your diagnosis in all of these areas I just mentioned is an important part of the healing process. As you may know, cancer affects the whole person and their entire family. We want you to know that asking for help, whether you are a patient, caregiver, or loved one, by joining a support group or contacting us for counseling is a sign of strength. Joining a support group is a way to connect with others who are going through a similar situation and experiencing similar issues. Individual counseling can provide a space that is just yours to voice any concerns you have and navigate any of the issues I mentioned previously. These connections help lessen the isolation that many people with cancer and their loved ones are experiencing, and feeling well emotionally can help you better cope with your diagnosis and treatment. I do want to emphasize that at this time, Cancer Care is going to be starting up 2 online summer support groups specifically for people with triple-negative breast cancer. These support groups will be starting up next week on June 1st, and I encourage anyone listening that might be interested in registering for those groups or who wants more information on the group to visit our website at www.cancercare.org so that you can get more information or to register. And again, if you're interested in any of our services, you can also call our Hope Line at 1-800-813-4673 or visit our website, which again is www.cancercare.org. And the website is very comprehensive. There you'll find a great deal of information not only on our supports, but also about all of our programs, as well as your cancer diagnosis, treatment options, and ways of coping. On our website, you can also register for future Connect Education workshops or listen to previously recorded ones. We've learned a lot from today's program, and there's certainly a lot of information to digest. Our social workers here can help you understand what it means for you and your loved ones. If you have any questions about today's workshops or would like to get more information on any of our services that I mentioned, please don't hesitate to get in touch with us. And lastly, please remember that you are not alone. Cancer Care Services are here and very happy to help support you. Thank you for your attention today, and Dr. Messner, thank you for the opportunity to speak to the group.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Lewis, and that was really excellent and really an excellent portrayal of the services that that our staff offer here today. And I know there will be questions for you also during the Q&A, so thank you so much. Well, now I want to thank our speakers. Now we have lots of time for questions. I'm going to ask Candace to explain to all of you how to queue up for questions, and I'm also going to ask Candace to bring all of our speakers on board so that we can be sure everyone's on board to answer your questions. And we're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible, and if we don't get to your question, I will then let you know at the end of the program how to get all your questions answered, so stay tuned. Candace, if you could just explain to everybody how to queue up for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star and then the number 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. And our first question comes from Lynn F. Your line is now open.
Thank you so much. Great program. 2 quick questions on a more likely to be a metastatic situation. Have you ever seen a lobular in the metastatic setting become a triple negative? And secondly, there wasn't any mention about the possibility of testing for androgen receptors. Does one need to know the percent positivity? And aren't there some trials that are coming up with androgen as a possibility for triple? Thank you.
Well, good to have you on the call. Great questions. I'm going to ask Dr. Telly if you could begin by addressing these questions.
Sure. So those are both really excellent questions. The first one was about, you know, how commonly one can see a lobular cancer being triple negative. most of the time, lobular breast cancers, these are tumors that derive from the gland of the breast. Most of the time, these are tumors that are going to be strongly positive for the estrogen receptor and the progesterone receptor, and most often negative for HER2. Certainly, there is a chance that you can have a lobular breast cancer that is triple negative, and I have certainly seen that. And I think that we would approach typically the treatment for a triple negative breast cancer, whether it were lobular or ductal, in a very similar fashion. The question about the androgen receptor is a very interesting one. We've learned over the past several years that in addition to ER and PR, the two hormone receptors, there is a third hormone receptor, which is the androgen receptor, which is can be commonly also expressed on breast cancer cells. And the rates of finding this marker in triple-negative breast cancer, the literature is a little bit mixed, with some studies reporting that it's present in about 10 to 12%, others more recently suggesting that at least some AR expression may be seen, perhaps up to 50% or more of triple-negative tumors. So this is of interest because there are drugs now, anti-androgen drugs, that are approved for the treatment of prostate cancer that have been looked at in triple-negative breast cancer, with a recent one, enzalutamide, showing definitely activity in patients with AR-positive triple-negative breast cancer. So I think for patients with recurrent triple-negative breast cancer, considering AR testing or talking to your doctor about it is a good idea.
Thank you so much. Excellent. And our next question?
And our next question comes from Stephanie Kay. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you so much, Caroline. This is an excellent, excellent seminar. I'm double negative and HER2 positive. This was 9.5 years ago, and I had chemotherapy and radiation. My question was, why the double negative people, we're not talked about that much because we have the HER2, and we're very, very different. Are we always pushed in with the triple negative with treatment, because I had Adriamycin, Cytoxan, Tafil, I had all the chemotherapies and the Herceptin, and I just want to know why you couldn't have Herceptin alone. And also my other questions is for alpha lipoic acid and vitamin B6 and B12, this has helped me immensely for the peripheral neuropathy, which I suffered for the last 9.5 years. So I want to know if there's studies done in alpha lipoic and vitamin B6 and B12, and is also studies being done for lymphedema patients, which I have from having a total axillary node dissection of 24 nodes. Is there studies besides the acupuncture, which I've gotten, you know, and the massage therapy? Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much, Stephanie. Dr. Talley, would you want to address this one as well?
Sure. So the first question was about, you know, being double negative and not triple negative. So in breast cancer, we think really that there are three major categories of breast cancers, those that are hormone receptor positive and HER2 negative. That's the largest group. The second group is the group of tumors that are HER2 positive, regardless of whether they are ER positive or ER negative. And then the third group is the patients that are triple negative. So whether the tumor is ER positive and HER2 positive or ERPR negative and HER2 positive, we consider any HER2 positive breast cancer as a distinct form of breast cancer. We think HER2 is really the driver, and so those are cancers that are commonly treated with chemotherapy and the HER2-directed drugs like Herceptin and Perjeta. Regarding the question about some of the treatments for neuropathy, this can be definitely a long-term side effect of chemotherapy drugs, primarily the taxane medications. There's a smaller risk with the platinum chemotherapy drugs, but it's definitely a risk with that group as well. There have been over many, many years, many groups looking at all kinds of strategies to help to minimize neuropathy. There's a lot done in this area in the GI cancer world, where some of the drugs can cause this side effect even more commonly than we see it in breast cancer. Unfortunately, there are no data to suggest that any specific intervention can help to prevent neuropathy. People have looked at a number of different medications, different supplements. Certainly there are anecdotal reports from patients who feel that certain things may help them The B vitamins, for example, for some patients, glutamine. But unfortunately, we have no data that suggests that there's any proven benefit in terms of prevention or treatment for neuropathy with any of these supplements at this point in time.
Thank you. And our next question?
And our next question comes from Christina R. Your line is now open.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for this seminar. My question is, what would you advise for somebody like myself who had, I did have stage 3 triple negative, but did not have PCR after ACT with carbo, radiation, et cetera, but didn't have PCR and kind of feel like, and or BRCA in that weird status of mutation of unknown significance. Is there anything that we can be doing other than Zolota? Are there clinical trials upcoming? Or I feel like we kind of get into this weird, after you're done with treatment but didn't have a complete resolution to it, we're in this weird waiting period, or maybe that's just, I have to get used to that.
That's an excellent question. Dr. Talley, do you want to address that?
Yeah, sure. This is a great question, and I think one that a lot of people ask about. So if we look at, you know, sort of the standard chemotherapy drugs, we see complete response rates somewhere in the 35 to 40% rate range. And when carboplatin is added, we've seen from those two studies, the one German study and the other American study, that those complete response rates go up to right around 50%. So that means, you know, 50% at a minimum of patients will not have a complete response when they get their chemotherapy prior to surgery. And we know that many patients without a complete response will still go on and have excellent long-term survival free of relapse. But we know that some of those patients who haven't achieved a complete response will be at an elevated risk of relapse. So there's been a lot of question about should we be giving more chemotherapy. Certainly other studies have try to look at this over time. There was a very recently reported study from a group. It was a study that was run in Japan and Korea. It was a large phase 3 study looking at patients with HER2-negative breast cancers. They could have been ERPR-negative or ERPR-positive as long as HER2 was negative. And they were randomized to receive 6 months of Zolota, so capecitabine, versus not. And they did find improvements in both relapse and survival rates for the patients who received 6 months of Zolota. And so this is relatively new data. It hasn't yet been incorporated into our treatment algorithms, but certainly it was data, high-level evidence from a phase 3 trial that Zolota in patients who did not achieve a complete response could be of benefit. There are a couple of clinical trials, one that's going on right now through one of the national cooperative groups in the United States, looking at randomizing patients who received AC Taxol to either carboplatin or capecitabine. And there is another trial that's coming that is going to, it's not yet activated, probably coming in the next year, that's going to look at randomizing patients to a year of immunotherapy with one of these PD-1, PD-L1 checkpoint inhibitors versus not, to see if that could provide additional benefit in patients who haven't achieved a complete response. So it's an active area, and so one definitely to pay attention to.
Excellent questions. Thank you. Wonderful answers. Thank you. And our next question is from our online participants, Chiara. What are PARP inhibitors? Please explain more, and what should I ask my oncologist about this? Dr. Mitchell, would you address this?
Certainly. Well, the PARP inhibitors are a group of medications that are not yet approved by the FDA, but it is very clear that some triple-negative breast cancers cannot repair DNA damage, and the damage caused by chemotherapy agents. So they're not able to repair that. And the PARP inhibitors combine with these medications to give more effective the chemotherapy outcomes in patients. So that there are clinical trials that are throughout the United States. You may find the listing of them on the website, clinicaltrials.gov. You can also find out if there are clinical trials near your location, and your physician can also find out how there can be access to these clinical trials for patients. So the PARP inhibitors have not been approved by the FDA yet, but there are clinical trials and large phase 3 trials that are currently ongoing in the United States. And, of course, we don't want to assume ahead of time the results of these trials, but I think it's very important that patients have access to the trial so that there can be potential participation as well as potentially a part of these trials so that we will know in the near future the effectiveness as well as the side effects of these therapies. So thank you.
Thank you. I want to thank our speakers. You've done phenomenal. And I want to thank our participants, those on the telephone online who've really asked such outstanding questions, really just an outstanding participants today. I want to remind you that this is a one-hour workshop, and in planning a program like this, we recognize that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. And so I do want to, I recognize that some of you still have questions, and we could go on all afternoon, but I'm going to give you resources to get your questions answered, which is most important. So I first want to let you know that if you have a medical question that you would like some help with answering. We always recommend that people call the National Cancer Institute. Their information specialists are always standing by after our programs to address your questions. Their number is 1-800-422-6237. Again, 1-800-422-6237. Also, however, if you have a question in terms of accessing services from our oncology social work staff at Cancer Care, whether it be practical or financial assistance or support with counseling services, someone to talk with about your concerns, or actually joining one of our triple negative breast cancer support groups, either the telephone or online groups, and actually or any of our programs helping people with cancer, with a person living with cancer, as well as a caregiver, please do contact us at Cancer Care, or if you wish to register for upcoming programs that we're offering, or if you want to order a publication, or of course you can always visit our website as well. But to contact our social workers, you would call 1-800-813-4673. Again, that's 1-800-813-4673. And I also want to remind all of you that this was part 2 of a 3-part series, so we do have a part 3 coming up, which is relevant to everyone on the call today as well. And the topic is precision medicine in breast cancer, which I think you'll find informative as well. And that program is happening on June 1st, and it's actually from the same time, 1:30 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and that will be on a Wednesday, of course, again. As we conclude the program today, I don't want anyone to feel that you're alone in coping with triple negative breast cancer or in coping with cancer in general. I want you to know that you're now part of the Cancer Care community. We're here to help you, and we're simply a telephone call away or a mouse click away on your computer. So I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes today's workshop, and you may all disconnect. Have a great day, everyone.